Okay, folks, next up is Joni Eisenberg. So we're just going to move on, but please be careful and be safe today.
Welcome to Heal DC. This is Joni with two very important guests this morning. We're going to be hearing from a young person working with PACA, Pan-African Community Actions. He'll be discussing their new campaign, demanding community-based control, prioritizing Ward 7 and 8. And he will be our first guest in a moment or two. And later on in the show, we have none other than the great Nkechi Taifa talking about her memoir, Black Power, Black Lawyer, and an upcoming fireside chat with Dr. Greg Carr. But we're going to start with a historical background on International Women's Day, a message that I recorded, I think, about 10 years ago, but it's still relevant. So let's hear it. During the month of March, women artists and activists are celebrated on the airwaves of WPFW. It's important to know the reasons why women are celebrated in March and the roots of March 8th as International Women's Day. International Women's Day originated in honor of two all-women strikes which took place in the United States over 100 years ago. During the 1800s, many all-women strikes were organized by women in the tailoring trades demanding better working conditions and shorter hours. One major strike took place on March 8, 1857, when garment workers in New York City marched and picketed for improved working conditions, a 10-hour day, and equal rights for women. Their ranks were broken up by the police. 51 years later, on March 8, 1908, women garment workers again marched in New York, honoring the 1857 march, demanding the vote and an end to sweatshops and child labor. The next year, in 1909, more than 20,000 young women, mostly immigrants in their teens and early 20s, launched an 11-week general strike in New York's shirtwaist industry. It was the largest strike by women to date in American history. Women were protesting deplorable working conditions, including fire hazards, the deafening sound of machinery, lack of light, and a very polluted environment. The women were clubbed every day by police and carried off in police vans. The courts were biased in favor of the sweatshop owners. The strike was broken, and 1 year later, the infamous Triangle Shirtwaist Fire occurred on March March 25th, 1911, trapping women on the upper floors due to bolted fire doors. 146 young women lost their lives. In 1910, the idea of an International Women's Day was first proposed and first observed in 1911. In 1975, International Women's Day was celebrated for the first time by the United Nations. 2011 was the 100-year centenary of International Women's Day. In the U.S., President Obama proclaimed March 2011 to be Women's History Month. Today, International Women's Day is celebrated in more than 27 countries worldwide. The uprisings at the turn of the 19th century and the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire sparked significant change and were critical events in the history of the U.S. labor movement, the New Deal, workers' compensation, and occupational health and safety standards. In 1991, 80 years after the Triangle Fire, 25 African-American women workers were killed, also trapped behind locked fire doors in an Imperial Foods, Hamlet, North Carolina, chicken processing plant fire. Walmart has been sued in recent years for routinely locking shift workers in their stores to, quote, prevent theft. As we celebrate March and Women's Month, let's take inspiration from the tens of thousands of militant women out in the streets more than 100 years ago. Don't mourn, organize. This is Joni Eisenberg with a Women's History editorial for WPFW 89.3 FM, your jazz and justice radio station. And welcome. I recorded that probably about 10 years ago, thanks to our dear sister, Nkinji Touré, who organized the International Women's Month programming for many, many years. And women are still out on the streets fighting, and I'm very excited to introduce our first guest, and he's going to help me say his name, Johannes. He is a young person with PACA, Pan-African Community Action Program. You can hear discussions about PACA often on Tuesday morning with Netfa and Craig every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. This is a new campaign just launched in February, demanding community-based control, prioritizing Ward 7 and 8, east of the river, and there's also a new health wellness program that we're going to discuss. And so I am pleased and excited to introduce our guest, Johannes. And Johannes, say your name, your first name and last name, and tell us a little bit about you.
Peace, Joni. Yes, thank you for having us. My name is Johannes Jotinho Jr. I'm a fifth generation Washingtonian and an organizer with Pan-African Community Action.
Great. And say that last name a little bit more slowly.
Jijinyo.
Okay, welcome. So it's very exciting that this was just launched in February. And there are two aspects to the campaign. The first is talking about a Pan-African community action campaign demanding community-based control. And then after that, we'll also talk about the wellness initiative. But tell us about this the major campaign demanding community-based control, and there are, I understand, 12 demands.
No, absolutely. Thank you. This is a burgeoning cornerstone campaign that we've launched recently around community control, which is a concept that has been with PACA since our founding in 2015. This particular campaign is meant to help our people in Southeast DC, working class Africans in Southeast DC, that is, understand the need, not just the possibility, but the need to develop institutions that allow us to wield power over the resources that determine the outcomes of our lives. So we don't want influence, we don't want representation. We understand that our relationship to this particular government and this particular nation is one that is constituted by top-down decision-making. And so we need to have our people understand that they are active participants in the outcomes of their lives, and that they have the potential to develop institutions that not only answer for their needs, but answer for the needs of all of their neighbors and loved ones as well.
Yes, a very important and ambitious project. If you can kind of go over the 12 demands or highlight whatever ones you you would like to.
No, absolutely. I think they're all equally as important. To start off, they're not in particular order, but to start off, I'd say the youth governing youth resources. So this is talking about the ending of the criminalization of our youth, as well as establishing governing power for our youth. Of course, you're not able to vote until the age of 18, but if you look at countries such as Cuba, they have the opportunity for children as young as 16 to engage in politics and civics in a way that is unprecedented in this country, for example, and unprecedented in much of the rest of the world. So what that could look like is the youth governing and coming together, and making binding decisions about resources that directly reflect in their lives materially. What that could look like is them having a say directly in what they're learning in school, having a say in what public institutions are raised in their community. So if you want to see a community center, there's a potential, there's a future where youth have a direct say in establishing that. What stops us from being able to realize that type of future is that we don't have institutions that allow us to do that. We don't have institutions that have direct power over the resources, have direct control over those resources. And so that's something we have to struggle for. But before we come together to build those institutions and develop that type of legitimacy in the eyes of our neighbors, in the eyes of working class DC, people have to understand that that is both possible and necessary. I can go on, but I think we'd speak to more of the demands through the conversation.
Sure. And of course, I'm looking at them now. The next one is a community control over policy and public safety. People should control the public resources. Health systems shall serve the community. That's a good one. But maybe talk a little bit about the people shall control public resources. What would that look like?
Absolutely. So we understand that currently in the representative democracy, you're asking for influence. The best you can ask for is that a benevolent elected official that is often served to us and pre-selected for us is making decisions that best serve you and your neighbors. But we're talking about having institutions, building institutions, raising institutions in our image, and that folks are active participants in that control those resources. And so when you talk about a public resource, these belong to the collective. These belong to the entirety of our community. So we believe in a reality. We believe in the necessity of a reality where participatory budgeting, for example, is binding and non-reversible. Obviously, that's a step. But the idea there is when folks come into a forum, no one knows your needs. No one knows, our needs on this side of the river better than those of us on this side of the river, east of the river, that is. And so coming into community with one another within the guides of an institution that we raise and that we take active decision-making in and we are active participants in, that's what the people shall control public resources. That's what that demand looks like. That's what that demand means versus asking an elected official to do that, asking for a council member to have your best interest at heart. We're talking about what's possible on the neighbor, on the block level, on the neighborhood level, ward level, even. This is the type of future that we imagine.
Yeah, and it's a great future, that's for sure. Transportation shall be free and accessible is another one. And this is one of my ones that I was extremely pleased to see. The government shall not be complicit in war and empire, and that's a very, of course, important demand. You want to comment on that one?
No, absolutely, yeah. On either of those, really. So, foremost, PACA, Pan-African Community Action, is a grassroots organization of diasporic Africans. We're building institutions of self-governance and collective power in Southeast DC. We ground ourselves in an internationalist politic that recognizes our domestic struggles as directly related to struggles against exploitation abroad. So what that means and what that looks like in this platform, I think you highlighted an excellent example of that. Our community shall not be complicit in war and empire. And so right now we understand that the systems of surveillance, again, all of these issues are connected. So when we talk about surveillance of our youth, when we talk about surveillance of our neighbors otherwise, it's international, it's Women's History Month, So when we talk about the targeting of different gendered groups or folks of varying sexualities, we understand those implications to be the very methods that are used abroad in other countries, targeting Africans and colonized people alike. And so we say that is not something that we want to be complicit in. That's not something that we want to support through materially or otherwise. And so the resources that are used to send abroad and create that type of destruction, we say no there, and we say no in our communities as well. And so we expect our institutions to preserve life home and abroad. And beyond that, we say no to sharpening your tools abroad, which we understand will come back and be used to target us in Southeast. Lastly, what I'll say to your point about free public transportation, it's public transportation. It should just be that. But I think something that you'll see throughout our platform is that perhaps it's the case that an elected official somewhere in this country would identify something that sounds similar to at least one of these demands. We are suggesting that this is a starting point. The entirety of all of this platform, all 12 of these demands are a starting point. This is not something that our community should be working towards. It is something that if someone is not putting this on the table as a place to start from, then there's no conversation to be had. We understand that these are necessities of life. We understand that these institutions are necessary, and we understand that our communities deserve these types of outcomes. And so we're just working to help them realize that so that we can start building.
Okay, great. And we don't have too much time left, but I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. first of all, for people who want to look at these 12 demands, can you share how they might find that information?
No, absolutely. Thank you. You can go to pacapower.org. That's pacapower.org. You can read more about our campaigns and programs that we have in place currently. You can read the platform in full, and we invite you to endorse the platform. We ask you to we ask our folks to endorse the platform so our neighbors can understand that there are organizations, local institutions, and individuals who not only agree with these demands as a starting point for what working class DC deserves, but they also understand that there are folks that are otherwise willing to institution build with them, and so that they can understand this as not just necessary, but possible.
Okay, and I want to make sure you have time to discuss the health campaign as well. But as you're moving forward, I guess explain how you intend to convince the powers that be that this is what, these are some of the things the community wants. What's your process for doing that, or your thoughts?
So let me work backwards. I'll answer a question, I'll raise a point about our programs foremost, because I think that'll actually help answer mm-hmm. the question. And so we have a control over education program of sorts. We have a popular education program, where the community comes in form with one another, and we talk about political topics that are relevant to our community and connect them to broader political topics. And in addition, what you were referring to, we have our People's Pan-African Wellness Front, which is our community control over health program. Now, why that's important as a starting point is our community control over health program is an expression of what community control can look like. And so if people have a difficult time imagining what this platform might look like at scale, we're showing right in Southeast DC on the fourth Sunday of every month at Rise Demonstration Center, we have free blood pressure testing, free glucose testing, medical professionals on staff. We have information about preventative health care and revolutionary health alternatives. And part of what that forum allows us to do is ground folks in an understanding of what is possible when coming together and when understanding the interconnected nature of all of the issues that we face. And so when you come into form with one another, when you have people skill sharing, learning about new ways of approaching our shared existence, then the limits are really infinite in a way. And so I lead with that because we don't need to appeal to elected officials. For example, when you are coming from the community that is owed these resources, the question is, what are we going to do to tend to one another? What institutions do we need to raise so that this problem that we've identified in all of our individual lives, when we come to understand that these are collective problems, what collective responses are we going to raise? And so that's part of what we're doing with the People's Pan-African Wellness Front, and that's part of what we're pushing forward with this platform.
Yes, and it certainly reminds me of what was done in the past in the Black Power movement back in the 60s when people were going door to door. I know that was true in New York City and Harlem, assisting people, teaching people how to use the blood pressure, test their own blood pressure, et cetera. And of course, as you know, and many of our listeners know, D.C. has some of the worst health disparities in not only in the country, but really in the world. So what you're doing is extremely important with this People's Pan-African Wellness Campaign. And we want to congratulate you for that. Anything else you want to say about the wellness campaign? I know you just started, and it's very, very exciting, very important work that a lot of our listeners would be pleased to hear about. How can people, is there a way that they can find out more about the wellness campaign or perhaps participate themselves, especially people in Ward 7 and 8?
No, absolutely. So you can visit us at PACA DMV on all social media for more recurring information. That's PACADMV on all social media. Again, this community control over health program is fashioned in the image of the Black Panther Party's free medical clinics. It's fashioned after what we see in Cuba. It's fashioned after even local efforts. After DC General was closed, you know, you had even around then, you had the People Before Profit Community Healthcare Project. So again, to your point, this is in a long line of traditional struggle. Please, we invite you in. You can learn more about our Community Control DC platform as well. And really just keep in mind that we're not only interested in the what in terms of addressing our needs, but we're interested in the how. Folks need to understand that they can and should become active participants. We need to be active participants in the change that we want to see. And participatory democracy, coming in community with one another and organizing to our shared objectives and our shared desire for what's next is really what we need to see. And that's what we push forward with in PACA. So thank you.
Well, we thank you. We really thank you for the work of PACA. Say your name one more time, and we hope to hear more from you in the future.
No, absolutely. I'm Johannes Trevino Jr., but more importantly, I'm with Pan-African Community Action.
Yes, and you can hear a lot more about PACA usually every Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., with Netfa and Craig. So thank you very much. We're very proud to have you as our guest today, and we look forward to hearing more about the really important work that you're doing with this new campaign. So absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. And so now in a moment, we're going to move on to talking to none other than the great Nkechi Taifa, talking about her memoir, Black Power, Black Lawyer, and an upcoming fireside chat. But we're going to start with what used to be her her intro song with her show that she had on WPFW. And actually, it was my intro song many, many years ago as well. So let's hear a little bit from Bob Marley.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
And what a great song to welcome none other than Nkechi Taifa. And I'm going to say she does not need really an introduction, but I'm going to try to introduce her anyway. And Nkechi can jump in with me. Of course, she can be heard mostly every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Roach Brown at Crossroads. It's always a pleasure to hear her. She used to have her own show up until about maybe a year ago. But of course, she's very active, not only in this area, but all over the country and really the world. She's a native Washingtonian, and she has a long history. Maybe, Nkechi, you can summarize your history. But I know one of the things many, many things I'm excited about with Nkechi is that we recently talked about a fabulous interview she did with Nkechi Touré. And perhaps before we begin, you can share with our listeners, how can they listen to that interview?
Oh, yes. Thank you so very much, Joni. And I am always thrilled to be part of the Heal DC with you as we are celebrating right now International Women's Month. And yes, I was very much honored to interview the great now ancestor Nkinji Touré as part of International Women's Month. And I did that interview. I've done several of them. One of them was right on this station, WPFW, and that can be found on my YouTube channel, the Nkechi Taifa Experience. But I also interviewed her as part of the SNCC Legacy Project, their Chronicles, Black History Chronicles, I think it's called. And these were two excellent interviews with someone who really, you're talking about a Black woman icon, trailblazer, Nkinji Touré. And like I said, everybody mix our names up. They think they call me Nkinji, they call her Nkechi, you know, but it's all good. So
Yes, it's all good. And that is a fabulous interview if people wanna check it out. And of course, as we've been saying, it's because of Nkinji that she launched us into this International Women's Day and International Women's Month. And I just want to mention, I forgot to mention that we opened the show with a 3-minute PSA that I did, or about maybe 10 years ago, on the history of International Women's Day. And I want to thank none other than James Funk, who played that Saturday morning at about 7:30. I was so surprised to hear myself, but thanks to Nkinji for really launching us, and the station is doing very well in really honoring International Women's Month. So with that said, you have a very...
And I meant month. I didn't mean to say day.
No, that's fine.
Year, International Women's Year, yes. It should be. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But we know, and you're right, International Women's Women's celebration is really every day of the year. So let's go. This is so exciting. Some of you, I know I've heard about this memoir in the past, but this is a special release, an audiobook release celebration. Nkechi Taifa's memoir, Black Power, Black Lawyer. And I'm going to ask Nkechi.
Here we go. It's all good.
To talk about the book, but we also are going to announce that this Thursday evening, March 19th, right here in D.C., Busboys and Poets on 14th Street, from 6:30 to 9, there's going to be a fireside chat with none other than my friend and Nkechi's friend, Dr. Greg Carr. So that's going to be quite an event. But let's start, Nkechi, with your memoir, Black Power, Black Lawyer. Give us an idea of what you cover in the book.
Yes. Okay, Joni, I'm pleased to. First of all, my book, Black Power, Black Lawyer, My Audacious Quest for Justice, it came out 6 years ago, right smack in the middle of COVID, okay, in September of 2020. And so as a result, I didn't really do much promotion, didn't have any official book tour. I just put it out because I've been trying to get that out for the past 50 years, if you really want to know. But my memoir, basically, it stitches suspense, calamity, humor, and wit into what I call a tapestry of history, of politics, law, culture, and yes, romance. My book is both serious and scandalous. Okay. I consider Black Power, Black Lawyer a gripping commentary on life, the perennial nature of human resistance against oppression, and my steadfast embrace of what is just. Now, I gotta warn y'all, my book is sometimes raw, it's sometimes abrasive, it's sometimes passionate. But what it does do, it offers my truth unapologetically and unfiltered, with honesty and authenticity. And I just want to conclude by just saying that my memoir, it really tells about a quest rarely heard, that for the resistors and the rebels, that of people who are on the pursuit of issues on the cutting edge. Because there are many memoirs out there that chronicle iconic leaders of the civil rights era, but few memoirs captured the, what I call, the transformative journeys of very ordinary people, of which I am, who came of age during that whole tumultuous Black Power era. So just Black Power, Black Lawyer, it gives a very, very uniquely personal view from an insider's perspective, because I am an insider, as well as an outsider, but insider's perspective into lesser known chapters of history, from vivid stories of the more militant aspects of the Black liberation struggle to the craziness of congressional sausage making. I give witness to ancestors, to people, and to moments that shape my identity, you know. So, and I just want to say about Greg Carr, I was so very honored when Greg Carr, the great phenomenal doctor, Professor Greg Carr, consented to do the forward to my book. So that's another reason why he I will be engaged in fireside chat with him about the book. And yes, this is the audiobook release celebration. Can't nobody narrate my book but me. I'm sorry. I could not have no AI, whatever those things
that's
are.
Right.
I had to narrate my own book. So that's why it's taking this long, because I'm so involved with so many other things.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And again, you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM to Heal DC with me, Joni. And I am thrilled to be talking with my dear friend, Nkechi Taifa, about her memoir, audiobook release celebration, Black Power, Black Lawyer. And as we're saying, there's going to be a special event this Thursday, 6:30 to 9 at Bus Boys at 14th Street Northwest, and with none other than our dear friend, Dr. Greg Carr, who has definitely been on this show many, many times and is part of the PFW family, and of course can be heard on many other platforms now. So we're happy that he's going to be there on Thursday night. But Nkechi, I want to take us back a little bit, because it seems to me I remember years ago you telling stories about your growing up in D.C. and how you became aware of the movement, of the Black Panther Party, et cetera. So maybe you could, if you want, take us back there and share with us some of the things that other things that you cover in this memoir as you were growing up into the beat. Beautiful young lady that you are now.
Well, thank you for saying young lady. Because, oh my God, I do have an AARP card. But I think one of the best ways of doing that is to just tell you about some of the chapters that are in the book. I talk about 1954 and before. I talk about white flight and gentrification. I talk about hair, skin, and other crude experiences. I talk about media images and race. I talk about the pony incident in Emmett Till. I talk about open up the casket. I talk about Me Too long before there was Me Too. And that was all my early, early, early life, chapter one. Chapter two is Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. I talk about my all Black neighborhood junior high school. I talk about African name, cultural attire, and unconditional love. I talk about good girl, bad boys, and the struggle. I talk about my all white girls Catholic high school. I talk about little militant me. I talk about flirting with the Black Panther Party, brothers from the NOM, et cetera, et cetera. And then I get into college. I talk about college student, revolutionary poet. I talk about Jesus was Black and had two wives. I say putting spice in life is not always nice. I talk about the Garvey movement and how it was very personal to me. And then we go into my chapter that talks about a change is going to come. I talk about who were these Henry brothers. I'm talking about Imari Abubakar Yobadeli and his brother Milton Henry. I talk about a Black nation in the South. I talk about the attack on Aretha Franklin's daddy's church. I talk about Free the Land, RNA, and COINTELPRO. I talk about Love Me Some New African Political Science. And I talk about carrying on the tradition of resistance. And of course, Get Up, Stand Up for Your Rights. That's chapter five. I talk about who paid reparations on my soul. Talk about educate, organize. And I say, go on and get that darn law degree. This is all before I was a lawyer. I talk about sex, lies, and videotape. Free Southern Africa, plastic cuffs and momentary deprivations of liberty, cutting my legal teeth in prison. I talk about the ketchup in my face case. I talk about the Capitol bombing resistance conspiracy case. And I talk about the David versus Goliath ABC case. And then we go on to talking about Clarence Thomas and Mumia Abu-Jamal and the CIA Contra crack connection and taxation without representation is still tyranny. I talk about the spirit world is very real. I talk about my big fat new African wedding and divorce. And I talk about my miracle birth baby. And it goes on and on and on, talking about my life, about when I was at Howard Law School and Tulia, tip of the drug war iceberg, and bringing the human face to Capitol Hill and roots of the reentry bill. And I feel good, Obama. And then coming in down to the close, I talk about crack disparity and all the work I did with respect to lessening that the ratio between crack and powder cocaine. I talk about clemency and inside scoop. I talk about redemption, mercy, and a slam dunk radiothon. Actually, that's what WPFW is all in the chapter, because on this radio station, we had a slam dunk radiothon bringing formerly incarcerated people, people who were still incarcerated, and their loved ones into these airwaves. And then as I came down to a close, I talk about political prisoners, and I talk about other people I represented, and I talk about to be young, gifted, and black. So there you go. It is all there, Joni Eisenberg. I mean, I just want to say, I talk about getting arrested just after graduating from law school, about being accused of being an FBI agent, of representing the lead defendant in the Capitol bombing case. I talk about being detained at an airport 5 months pregnant as an alleged enemy of the state. And I talk about winning a six-figure settlement in a landmark employment discrimination case against a major news network and helping to spark that change to the infamous crack cocaine law. So it is chock full of juicy and very serious and funny humanist information, but it's all about my life. And I am proud that I call it, I birthed my baby. The birth of my baby was the birth with my book, Black Power, Black Lawyer, My Audacious Quest for Justice.
Wow. And I'll just say, I know I'm speaking for many listeners, we are very proud of you. And we have been listening and know about you for quite some time. In a moment, we're going to jump to your discussion about what is happening on Friday night about a reparations party. But before we go there, I just want to ask you one final question about your life. I can remember you talking about growing up in DC as a young person. If you can kind of just give us one example, perhaps maybe something from your mother that inspired you or taught you when you were really young, that maybe you were 9, 10, or in your early teens, that really got you to realize that you needed to be involved with this Black Power movement or changing this culture and society of ours, including changing Washington, D.C.
So one of the things, Joni, I would say is that both my parents were educators. My father taught for decades at Backus Junior High School, and my mommy was an assistant principal at Roosevelt. So they always had books in the house when I was growing up. And as a very young person, I remember sitting in the den of our home that had the library with books and flipping through a book called A Pictorial History of the Negro in America that was written by Langston Hughes and I forgot who else it was written by. But I'm flipping through the pages and I see this picture of this 14-year-old youth, this boy, okay? And the reason why it struck me so much is that I was just a little teeny top baby when he was lynched. And we're talking about none other than Emmett Till. Right. And that really left a deep impression upon me that these things were not stuff that happened way back in slavery times, which in my mind was, to my young mind at that time, was millions of years ago, but was right there within my lifetime. So if my parents had not had all of these books that were available, not anywhere near the books we have available to us today, but you know, back in the day, it helped to fertilize my very, very inquisitive mind. Because, you know, back then, I don't know, folk didn't really talk about the discrimination that was going on. I remember asking my mommy, what was it like to ride in the back of the bus? And she said, oh, Needy, we didn't ride in the back of the bus. We, you know, because my mommy was from New York. That didn't happen up there. Mm. Up north. And I know that that wasn't true, but like, just like Tulsa, Oklahoma, people did not tell about these stories. You just kind of had to pick things up. And I think that's one of the problems we as a people, Joni, face, because we forget. And, you know, the whole maxim in the Jewish community, never forget. We must never forget. We must know our history, which is why I wanted to put the history of me in my memoir, Out Black Power.
Absolutely. And Nkechi, say the name of your mom and your dad.
Oh, my mother's name is Josephine McIntosh Caldwell, and my father was St. Elmo Caldwell. And I know a lot of folk who are baby boomers, and she was like, Miss Caldwell, that's your dad. Oh, Lord have mercy, because he had a reputation over there.
Wow.
Junior high school.
And speaking of Emmett Till, we just want to also give a shout out to the SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, people who were young back then when Emmett Till was killed. And of course, our own Dory Ladner, and Joyce Ladner is still with us, but Dory Ladner, who transitioned a week ago, March 11th. And all of those people from that generation of SNCC activists always talk about Emmett Till and the story. Okay, let's jump now, Nkechi, and talk about what is going on Friday with your reparations party.
Yes. So there's going to be people from all over the country, reparationists in town in D.C. For, you know, a meeting and a session. And we say, you know, we need to let the community see what's going on with reparations across the country, meet some of the movers and shakers, the movers and groovers. So there's going to be what we call a party with a purpose. And if y'all remember back in the day, our dear brother Damu Smith, he used to have those party with a purpose over there on French Street, Northwest. I don't know if y'all remember that. So we kind of adopted that name for that. So there's going to be Proverbs Reggae Band. Okay, you know what we're talking
about. Proverbs has their own show on PFW every Saturday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. So this is a chance for people to see and hear them in person.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be at the Thurgood Marshall Center, 1816 12th Street, Northwest. And we want people to just kick back, relax, you know, party, you know, and just engage with local groups in the community, loads of the local groups that are part and parcel of the Pan-Africanist Black Nationalist community, but also with reparationists from across the country. Robin Ruth Simmons, who is the architect of the Evanston, Illinois Reparation Program, which is giving out reparations right here, right now, will be there, and so many others as well. So we invite the community to come and join us as well.
And repeat the time and the location.
The time is, you know, about 6:30 to 10 at the Thurgood Marshall Center, 1816 12th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. And we will be coming from another event. So that's why I said 6:30 as opposed to 6 o'clock, but somewhere around that time frame, you know, we'll be there all evening.
Absolutely. And repeat again, and I forgot to ask you about your book. This wonderful audio release celebration book, Nkechi's memoir, Black Power, Black Lawyer. For people who maybe are not going to be able to make it Thursday night for this fireside chat, how can they find more information about your book or perhaps getting a copy for themselves? How could they do that? Is there an email or website?
Yes, actually the event, fingers crossed, because you know technology and Mercury is in retrograde right now. But fingers crossed, it will be live streamed, and the live stream link should be, or if it is not now, will soon be on my website, NkechiTaifa.org or ReparationEducationProject.org. So that's Nkechi. Let me just spell that name because you know, our tongues and everything have been colonized. N is a Nancy, K E C H I. T is in time, AIF as in Frank A, NikichiTaifa.org or NikichiTaifa.com, either one, or my other website, ReparationEducationProject.org, and that's reparation without the S. And can I mention one more thing?
Sure.
I'm not sure how much time we have, but
yeah, we have time.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that on the back of my book, I was so very honored to have blurbs of support from Angela Davis. You know, she said, Black Power, Black Lawyer offers us a breathtaking narrative of her life devoted to Black liberation. She goes on to say, from the principal defense of political prisoners to demands for reparations, we witness the exciting trajectory of a lawyer whose work clearly moves us toward radical futures. And I'm not going to read the others, but just Danny Glover, actor, film director, and political activist, wrote something on the back of my book.
Wow.
Dr. Julius Garvey, the son of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey.
Yes, and he was on your show.
On the back of the book.
And he was on your show in Kichi several times.
Many times. Yeah. Many times he's been on Human Rights and Justice. Mm-hmm. James Forman Jr., the son of James Forman, who was head of SNCC at one time, wrote a blurb on the back. Nikki Giovanni, my poet.
Wow.
Ido wrote a blurb on the back, and Sonia Sanchez, I did as well. She on the back of the cover of the hardback, and Rukia Lumumba, from the daughter of the great Chokwe Lumumba, who's actually aunt, and his sister just wrote a memoir about his life. So I'm just honored all the way around, from Greg Carr writing the foreword to the book to all of the great luminaries who wrote words of praise on the back of the book. And of course, the book itself, the hard copy, the replica, is available wherever you get your books. Go to Sankofa, go, wherever. But online, of course, I like to encourage people to buy Black. And you can buy Black online at African American Literary Book Club. It's AALBC.com, www.aalbc.com. Of course, you can go to that other place. We won't mention what that is. And, you order it today, you'll get there by tonight. But I encourage people to buy Black, and you'll still get it very timely. And all the information about that is on my website, NikichiTaifa.org.
Yes, and of course, we have Black bookstores right here in Washington, D.C., that hopefully would have your book.
Yeah, Sankofa Bookstore for sure. And if you don't see it there because it sells out a lot, say, y'all need to go and be ordering Nikichi's book, Mahogany. If you don't see it there, talk to them. Politics and Prose. I must admit, Joni, I have not done a good job promoting around because I'm so busy.
Yes, you are busy.
It's a struggle, you know what I mean?
Yes. But, I would say, maybe real quickly, something, we're facing so many horrific things in this world. And I'm going to ask you, what gives you hope? But before I ask you that question, I just want to mention, you talked about James Forman Jr. James Forman Sr. was one of the leaders of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And it was James Forman who ordered none other than our wonderful mayor, Marion Barry, to come to Washington, D.C. to organize for statehood. That's why Marion Barry came here.
Wow.
So isn't that something? Of course, we don't hear about that enough. James,
I'm glad you mentioned that. And we're still struggling for statehood, too.
yes, we are. And of course, James Forman Sr. was on our airwaves for many years before he transitioned. So we have about two or three minutes left. Tell us, it's such upsetting news being going on in the world. Of course, a lot of it led by our so-called president. Tell us what your hope is in terms of our ability to organize and really continue to organize and fight for a positive world where the people are more in control.
Yeah. Well, we have been here before. I mean, we are a resilient people. When I think about what our ancestors went through on those death ships coming over here, when I think about the torture and the genocide, all of that, when I think about all of those things, and we survived, okay? Mm-hmm. And we thrived. And then the cycle you know, tends to go back and back and back. But we need to recognize, and I recognize, and this is what gives me hope, that we are a resilient people and that this is a protracted struggle, and we will conquer without a doubt. This is a saying, Kiswahili saying we used to talk, say during the day, when lazima tutashinde mbele chaka. We shall conquer without a doubt. So that's what gives me hope, Joni, that we will. When we have radio stations like WPFW that bring so much needed information to our people, that's what gives me hope. What gives me hope are the people who are out there in the streets marching and demonstrating. Yes. Reverend Graylin Hagler gave me hope. I mean, it's just, you know...
Yes, So let me just say, we have a call from Rick from Germany, but I'm not sure we have time. Let me just make sure that I make these announcements. I want to let people know that next Monday, which is March 23rd, we will be celebrating, To Heal DC will be celebrating our 34th anniversary on the air. We're going to be talking about some of our past struggles and experiencing closing of DC General, the fight now we have to continue to provide healthcare in this city, and our current struggles. And of course, we're going to be inviting some young people, including Harriet's Wildest Dreams, talking about the future ahead. So that's next Monday, March 23rd. Stay tuned for Mark Thompson, Make It Plain, on right here at 11 o'clock, 2 p.m., Dr. Watkins, To Your Health. And I want to encourage everybody to stay strong, keep your mind on freedom and as well as on your own health. I also want to thank our new, he's new to me at least, our new engineer, Brian. And we give a shout out to our own Magic Mike, who's still with us in spirit, who I understand helped to train Brian. So we're very thankful for that. I'm going to ask Brian, do we have time for Rick to make a 30-second comment? If not, I want to thank Rick for calling in and always supporting WPFW. We're sorry we can't always take calls, but...
Yeah, I think they said, yes, you have time for Rick.
Okay.
I know Rick from Germany.
Yay. Welcome, Rick. Real quick, your comment. See, this is why
he may not still be on. But yeah. Rick is a constant caller, and particularly to Crossroads. I know I'll hear from him tomorrow because I'll be on Crossroads tomorrow.
Absolutely. That's tomorrow at 10 a.m. with Roach Brown and Kichi Taifa and Martine. So that's something to listen to as well. One more time, we have time to just repeat. This Thursday, what's happening?
This Thursday, there will be a fireside chat with myself and the great, phenomenal Greg Carr, who wrote the foreword to my book, Black Power, Black Lawyer, My Audacious Quest for Justice. That will be at Bus Boys and Poets, 14th and U Street, Northwest, at 6:30 p.m. It will also, it is celebrating the audiobook release of my book, and the audiobook will be available wherever you listen to your audios, but it might not be available yet on that day because I found out they have to go through this process, so just keep tuned. But the physical copy of the book, you can find it at www.aalbc.com. That's African American Literary Book Club.com, or wherever books are sold, particularly our beloved Sankofa bookstore.
Yes, absolutely. And I also want to thank our first guest this morning, Johannes, with the Pan-African Community Action campaign. They just launched two new campaigns, Community Control DC campaign and the People's Pan-African Wellness campaign. And again, you can hear more about that, I'm sure, every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. right before Roach's show. So thank you. Thank you again to Brian. Thank you to Mari. Thank you to all our wonderful listeners, our WPFW family, who is keeping us live on this radio station in these tough times. But we know that when people get up and stand up, we can win. So let's go out with Nkechi's theme song. Get
right
up.
Now. Is that get up, stand up?
Get
that's
up,
what
stand
I used to
up.
Open up human rights and justice.
Here we go. Really
yeah.
It's thank a you, Kichi.
Thank you, Joni.
After story had never been told, so now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on, get up.
WPFW News Director Sue Goodwin with this weather announcement. Severe weather will be moving across the D.C. metro area today and the Mid-Atlantic. By early afternoon through mid-evening, there is a significant threat for storms capable of producing damaging winds, blinding rain, and isolated tornadoes. A first round of storms could affect areas west and then north of D.C. beginning now through 1 p.m. A few of the storms could be severe. The greatest concern in the region is a probable line of storms between 3 and 9 p.m. The most intense storms could produce wind gusts of 60 to 80 miles per hour. Several area schools have plans to dismiss early and teach remotely. Public schools in Washington, D.C., Arlington, Fairfax, Montgomery, and Prince George's counties are among those slated for early dismissal. Most are closing 2 hours early, so check your school's websites for detailed information. Federal agencies in the D.C. region will be open Monday. Will be open today, and employees have the option of unscheduled leave or telework. Residents are advised to check all devices for power and charge them now. A power outage can force the close of grocery stores, gas stations, ATMs, and banks. So again, plan ahead. Also, stay aware of weather conditions in your immediate area if you are under a tornado warning. Take shelter in an interior room on the lowest floor with no windows or exterior walls. Be extremely cautious about any kind of travel. Avoid driving during the storms, especially along tree-lined streets. Also, avoid streets that are accumulating water, which could lead to flooding. We hope you all stay safe. WPFW will keep you up to date on weather conditions throughout the day. This is WPFW News Director Sue Goodwin.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, launches the People's Pan-African Wellness Front in Southeast DC, a reoccurring community-run wellness program that provides material health resources, preventative health screenings, and accessible health education while building long-term community trust and power. Inspired by the legacies of the Black Panther Party's People's Free Medical Clinics and Cuban healthcare model, this program will initially provide free blood pressure and diabetes screenings, free hygiene products, medical supplies, and health information and guidance for preventative care from medical professionals on hand, all while organizing toward long-term self-determination and community control over health. From 12 noon to 3 p.m. every fourth Sunday of the month at the RISE Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information can be found on the webpage pacapower.org/events. That's pacapower.org/events. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Tuesday, March 17th at 7 p.m., we will offer a conversation with Cuban Ambassador Leonis Torres Rivera about what is happening presently in Cuba, the state of the people, and the sovereignty of their nation. Again, that's Tuesday, 7 p.m., on Liberation on Our Minds, WPFW, Building a More Informed World, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, we're the Greater Youth.